AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, we have, let's add it up. We have 1-2 games left at Highmark Stadium. I think I have that right. So, barring playoffs. And I think there's a chance that the game we saw today could go down as one of the more memorable games in that stadium.
It seems like it. I mean, I saw someone tweet out the comment of, it feels like recently we've been in a lot of game of the years on the losing side, and it just feels good to win one for once. Mm-hmm. It does kind of have that vibes, although let's not be too short-minded. The season opener was a pretty special game of the year as well, also against an AFC North opponent, mind you, and had a similar vibe to it as well, where early on, hope was being dwindled away very quickly as you couldn't stop a nosebleed on defense and they were just imposing their will on us in a different fashion. But then all of a sudden it's just like something happened. And then that late game surge headed by the one and only Josh Allen seems to capitalize on opportunities. You get that little bit of turnover luck on top of it all and you turn a game on its head and next thing you know, you win it. So it was definitely for the, what's the way to put it? For what that win does for this team in this season at this moment in time, for how it started to the way it ended, that definitely increases and amplifies the special nature of what took place. And I feel like, Josh, we talked about it, I think it was last week's episode, where you would like to assume or hope that this team will be focused for that Jets game that closes out the season, as well as the Cleveland game that's coming up shortly in a couple weeks. So they just for making the playoffs in that realm, you needed to get to 11. And that meant you had to win one of the next of the other three, which was Bengals, Patriots, and Eagles, to get that win out of the way.
Yeah.
Is crazy special. So now it feels like you just have to keep taking care of business. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go on a massive run here. You just got to take care of business for throughout the rest of the season by getting this win here. That should alleviate so much pressure and stress in that building moving forward as they make the postseason push, that it's definitely great. And then on top of it all, the cherry on top, Josh, is getting that win over the Bengals effectively eliminates them from any ability to win their division and somehow backdoor their way into the playoffs. That is sweet, because no one in their right mind in the AFC would want to see Joe Burrow coming to their building and see what they can do. And, or you have to go to Cincinnati for whatever reason, because they won their division, and play that game. Maybe the Bills would have potentially had to go to Cincinnati in that wild card round if they backdoored their way into an AFC North championship. And it's like, holy shit, how did we end up here right now? That was the reality if they lost that game, or could have been reality if they lost that game. And by getting that win in the fashion that they did, it pretty much shuts the door on that. And that is a beautiful cherry on top of it all.
So big picture wise, to your point, the Bills are now 9-4, and we both agree they have to get to 11 and they'll be just fine. This is not, I mean, there are still paths to the Bills winning the division. If they beat New England next week, and then New England loses to Miami, who's playing better ball right now, the Bills will win the division if they win out. But, you know, let's kind of put that aside for now. But The biggest deal was get that win in the three games where it felt like the Bills had an even opponent, the Eagles, the Bengals, and the Patriots. What this game now, I think, affords the Bills is an ability to be cautious. Where today, in my opinion, it felt like they maybe pushed the issue with Dalton Kincaid. I think there was an argument that Dalton Kincaid probably should have sat. Knee and a hamstring on a slick field, and they decided to put him out there, and they won. And, you know, now I think, I don't know that I expect them to necessarily be cautious next week, because if they lose next week, the AFC East is over. But I think maybe going forward, you could see the Bills be a little bit more cautious, which would be ideal. Let's talk about the game itself. How will this game be remembered, Luca? Because I think there's a segment of fans that'll say, wow, the Bengals were the better team. They just shot themselves in the foot. Then there's going to be a segment of fans that say, wow, the Bills could have blown them out. They just shot themselves in the foot. It just really depends. I look at it as, with Burrow healthy, these two teams are pretty darn even. And it just so happens that the Bills made their foot shooting plays in the first three quarters of the game. And by that, I mean Ty Johnson tripping over the snow instead of scoring a touchdown. James Cook fumbling twice in the end zone on the same drive, taking 7 points off the board. And the Bengals, in true Bengal fashion, saved their best or worst for last. And they had back-to-back turnovers on plays that aren't necessarily shooting yourselves in the foot. They were plays that were definitely made by the Bills, but still bad luck bounces of the football. And at the end of the day, I think that the team that deserved to win won the game. But for a while, Luke, it felt like this was heading toward a Bills loss.
I love what you closed that point with. It does feel, in my opinion as well, that the team that deserved to win won the game. And why I get to that conclusion is it really was just a couple bad bounces. That so the tripping over is one of these, and that James Cook fumble, it's you're inches away from potentially scoring that, and it changes the complexity of the game. Whereas the Bengals, it felt like they came out hot, but eventually were just incapable of sustaining things, and it was, you know, whatever it was that got them to the point that it was, they just were not as efficient with their offensive game plan. They still were doing great. They were still moving the ball well and stuff like that. And I can absolutely understand if someone out there tells me otherwise and believes that the Bengals won, but it just felt as if from a complete nature of everything, the Bills' offense and identity and stuff, where there were some stumbling blocks, it just had a more complete feel to it. Whereas the Bengals truly were a one-dimensional side on the back of Joe Burrow, just dicing him up, and early everything was going right. But eventually, once, you know, reality set back in for Joe Burrow, and it's like, hey, you're not going to complete every pass you throw out here and things of that. It didn't stall out completely, but it just, they didn't have any counterpunch to what the Bills started throwing at them. And the Bills, for an extended full 60 minutes, in my opinion, put together a better performance that ultimately, I believe, it deserved that victory. And as you're also putting it, the Bills made some mistakes, and we talked about the stumble and the James Cook fumble. The Bengals' mistakes were way more crucial situationally. And then, of course, on top of it all, I mean, the pick six by Christian Benford, and when that occurred, that completely flips everything on its head to a point of it just, when it rains, it pours, when it snows, it avalanches for what's going on with this Bengals team. And it, as I mentioned before, they stalled in a way that wasn't, hey, we can't do anything at all. But also, they just didn't have that counterpunch, that answer to doing things, and eventually they got. It just takes one or two moments to screw things up, and both defenses were struggling mightily today. I think that's pretty apparent. but the Bills defense at least came up with the bigger plays and created those plays to capitalize on them at a better time in the game, and just did it deservingly did more so with them. It feels as if the Bills team top to bottom was the better performing team on the day. The Bengals were on the back of Burrow, just backpacking their way through it as best they can. And it's a fire that you accidentally put too much gasoline on initially, and it burned itself out when it needed to the most at nighttime. And you really needed to finish it out and get through the night to then keep it going. It felt as if they ran out of gas there, and there was just nothing else in the tank for them to do. And once that turnover happened, it was game over. It was that, between that and then Joe Burrow throwing back-to-back interceptions still blows my mind. I cannot believe that someone of his caliber would do that. But when that happened, it was over at that point, and it felt like truly the Bengals just had nothing else to deliver other than Joe Burrow providing magic, which can only get you so far, as we saw today.
In a lot of ways, this game was a microcosm of both teams' roster builds, where, and I mentioned this at halftime on the halftime show, that there's a lot of frustration among Bills fans and on this podcast of the lack of weapons for the Bills. And if you want to see what it looks like when a team has weapons, look no further than the Bengals, when you have Mike Gesicki making acrobatic catches out there, and then obviously Higgins and Chase, and then Chase Brown, and they have no shortage of weapons. Noah Fant was a first-round pick at one point in time. But the Bengals have a very lopsided roster build. They've invested all of their money on the offensive side of the ball, which has led to a standoff with their excellent defensive player, Trey Hendrickson, who ultimately will no longer be a Bengal after this season. He did not play today. And I think you saw that today, where when it's going good for the Bengals, they are a high-flying machine, and they can throw the ball all over you. But they didn't have that running game as a counterpunch today. The Bills had James Cook go for 4.4 yards per carry, 18 carries for 80 yards. And he actually did not. And he had another two catches for 31 yards receiving, where Chase Brown was held to 1.9 yards per carry. And then when you want to talk about defenses, we know the Bills defense is not elite by any standards, but they have a nose for making the big play. And they made the two biggest game changing plays with the back to back interception, the Christian Benford pick six, and then the tip pass. I forget who tipped it. Was it Deion? Oh, no, it was Jordan Phillips. Jordan Phillips tipped it, and AJ Epenesa caught it. And, you know, that was the difference in this game, is the Bengals needed to be perfect passing the ball because no other facet of their team was going to win the game. Luca, I think there's going to be a lot of things about this game that we want to talk about. But for me, the theme of the day, where my head is immediately at, looking at the landscape of the AFC, looking at the fact that the Steelers went to Baltimore today, and while the Ravens aren't dead, put them on life support. The Bills buried the Bengals and Joe Burrow. He's gone. Patrick Mahomes is taking on a Texans team tonight, missing three of his starting offensive linemen. He could be on life support after tonight. We've been talking about this AFC. The reality is here. There, in my opinion, is not one team in the entire AFC that scares me from a Bills perspective. There's not one team in any stadium, in any scenario, that the Bills could get matched up with, whether it's wild card division, AFC championship round, where I think, man, that's going to be tough. They're going to have to bring their A game. Can all these teams beat the Bills? Yes. There's no prime Mahomes, prime Chiefs at Arrowhead on this slate. There's no MVP Lamar at Baltimore on this slate. And it is, Luca, as wide open for the Bills, albeit going to have to be on the road most likely, to get to where they've been trying to get to since 2020.
This is the first season in a long time where you definitively can say in the AFC, and for the most part in the NFL, that there's not just one true juggernaut. There's not one team that's clearly the standard. And the Eagles were that pretty much all of last season on the thighs of Saquon Barkley. It's like you watch them and you're like, they are clearly a class above the rest. They are not that this year. You look at the Rams and the Seahawks, even them being kind of what it feels like the standard. And I'm talking a lot of NFC teams because honestly, the NFC has more to say about this than the AFC. Those teams still can get got on their day. They're not perfect, everything of that such. Then you look at the AFC, tipping it over to the AFC side. Your Patriots are the one seed right now, inexperienced at its most. What are they? They are, what, 30 yards against Joe Flacco away from losing that game in Cincinnati at one point. They're to me, not exactly world beaters. And I just think there's a lot of question marks that are still there. And we'll learn a lot more about them next week. I mean, that's the best part about the Patriots right now, is the Bills going to New England is going to tell a lot of people, and including us, who the Patriots are even more so. I think that will be a marquee matchup for a lot of the league to watch. And then, as you mentioned, you trickle it down. There's the one that really is blowing my mind is, and felt like a legitimate threat for the Bills and stuff that was scary at its height, was the Colts. The Colts are folding right now. I mean, they're injury riddled left and right. Daniel Jones goes down terrible. He has a hairline fracture in his one leg. And then unfortunately what happens is, when you compensate for that, you see what happens sometimes take place today. You feel terrible for him, especially considering he appears to be the long-term answer, hopefully, for the Colts. But then it's like 9-month recovery timetable, Achilles tear. You also need to let that other broken femur heal up. Like, there is so much going on with that you feel a little bit for Colts fans. But they're effectively, in my opinion, starting to, they're not in consideration for playoffs anymore. Like, I don't see how on the back of Riley Leonard, you're going to be able to do much. Riley Leonard was in a national championship a year ago. Notre Dame will not be repeating that such. That's another topic of today. But the Colts were really the biggest threat. They're not going. You mentioned the Chiefs. I know there's a lot of people out there, and I just don't even know where to land on it. I'm just going to let tonight's game play. We say tonight because, rare instance, anyone peek behind the curtain, we are recording before even Sunday night football starts. Very rare for us. I'm in this weird world where the Chiefs don't even worry me at all, to the point of I'd actually prefer them to be in the dance, because I think if you had to tell me it's between them, the Texans, or I'm trying to think who else is probably in consideration right there. It's like, I kind of would rather play the Chiefs because we're built for them. We're built to play the Chiefs. Mahomes is not scary. They have their own shit going on right now. That's like, I don't know what you're going to get out of them. And that feels great, because usually you do know what you're going to get out of them. And that's what's scary. So from there, you look at the other AFC. I mean, are we really going to sit here and say we're scared of the Jags? Are we going to say we're worried about the Steelers after what we saw last week? No. You are absolutely spot on. The AFC is just, anyone can get got. Anyone can be gotten. It's just play your game and figure it out. And it feels good if you're a Bills fan sitting there and being like, who's got a better quarterback in this whole mix than the Buffalo Bills? And the answer is most likely no one. You can give that argument to the Chiefs if they end up making it. You can give that argument to pretty much no one else, because that is the metric. And in the playoffs, what do you absolutely want to make sure you have? The better quarterback. That is the ultimate equalizer that can make up for everything. You saw it again today, how important it is just to have that elite quarterback. You saw it week one against the Ravens. You can see what a special quarterback can do with a deficient roster all around it. It can still make plays happen. A great quarterback can still get you that win. And it just takes a string of good play to get over the finish line and get to your end goal. I share your feelings on it. It's you just got to get in that dance. The Bills as a 5 seed might be one of the best 5 seeds of recent memory in playoffs. You look at that team with the amount of experience it has and Josh Allen at quarterback. I don't think anyone in the 4 seed, and then the eventual 1 seed, if that's how it worked out or whatever it is, no one wants to be sitting there playing the Bills and Josh Allen coming in their house. I mean, that's a worst case scenario for any other team sitting there. You would like to be playing otherwise. So the playoffs are shaping up in a weird way, Josh, where it's like the importance of winning the division couldn't be less right now. Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that winning the AFC East will probably get you the bye. That is the only thing about the division this year that kind of sucks is if they ultimately don't get it, it could have been the year they got the bye week finally. And you look back at that week four game, and it's like that's potentially what cost it to you, or the Miami game that cost you the bye week. That sucks because it's something they've always been trying to go for. But outside of that, Josh, the division could mean no more than that. And it's like, we're in the dance. We can be moving. And from there, who the hell is going to be stopping us? As long as the biggest opponent of the Bills, and I'll end it here, is the Bills. As long as they don't get in their own damn way and make their own stupid mistakes, they are better or should be able to beat any other team out there in the entire field. And that's a great feeling.
If the Bills end up being the 5 seed, which seems pretty likely at this point, because when you look at the AFC, the Bills are sitting there at 9-4. The Colts are 8-5, but as Luca mentioned, they're dead. Like, they lost their quarterback today. They're not going to – I think they're going to start stacking up losses. So I think you can kick them aside. If the Texans were to lose tonight, they would drop to 7-6 to the Chiefs. If they win, they're 8-5, and now they're on the Bills' heels, have the head-to-head. Chargers play tomorrow night against the Eagles. But let's just go in a world – I mean, there's still teams that can catch the Bills in the 5-seed conversation. But the 5-seed in the AFC is almost certainly going to go to the winner of the AFC North. And today there was some big progress there, because I think two of the scariest matchups for anybody would be at Joe Burrow or at Lamar Jackson. Well, Joe Burrow is essentially eliminated now after what the Bills did to the Bengals today. And Lamar Jackson just does not look right. The Ravens don't look right. Statistically, he had a good day today. He is not running at Lamar Jackson's speed anymore. And the Ravens just look like a team on life support. And what Bills fan in their right mind after watching last week wouldn't just run and sign up for a round one matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers? I mean, that you're talking about a situation where the Bills are on the road, Luka, and they're probably favored by 6 or 7 points after how they dominated last week. So, all that being said, I don't think Bills fans right now anyway have to worry about that doomsday scenario of not making the playoffs. That's what this win means today. What else the win means is next week against the Patriots, if they lose, Patriots win the AFC East. You mentioned the AFC division doesn't matter to you, and I promise we're going to break down more of this Bengal game. It was a fun game. How much, if at all, will it bother you if and when the Patriots win the AFC East?
Little. At this moment in time, this is the least deserving division title Bills team we've had since 2019. And I only put 2019 because they were also not division worthy winning. And then 2020 is when they started their run. Since 2020, this is the team also, it's just, I don't know. They just don't feel like a division winner. There's too many deficiencies. I mean, we all recognize how frustrating this team is week in, week out with, whether it's the game plan, whether it's the personnel, whether it's coaching, whatever you want to call it, a multitude of reasons. This is just the least perfect, the least complete Bills team we've had since they were a wild card team in 2019. And you have kind of been beating that drum for the most part, where just people need to embrace that almost at this point. This is a wild card team. That's what they are. It's what they feel like. The roller coaster of winning, then losing, then winning, then losing. We just strung together wins for the first time since September, I want to say it is. Mm-hmm. It's what at least it feels like. That's what a wild card team is. So will it be a little sad that we didn't win the division and the Patriots did win? Yes. Am I going to be sitting here saying, oh, the Patriots are fully back to being a dynastic run where we'll never win the division again? Absolutely not. As long as you have Josh Allen, you always have a shot at everything. That is the reality of being a Josh Allen-led team. But it'll be a little upsetting if it finalized happens. And especially if it came against the Bills like it would in this scenario. But no, I mean, outside of just being like, damn, like no division win, no six in a row for this team, I couldn't care less. It does not mean anything more than that. The inability to get the one seed upsets me more than losing the division, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of Bills fans are at, is if if it's coupled with the Patriots winning the one seed, I think it'll sting more because that has been what's eluded the Bills. But the Bills, they have division banners since 2020. It just doesn't matter that much. All right. What else about this game did we learn about the Bills? I think one thing I took away is I like Ryan Vandermark as a swing tackle, as a depth piece. He struggled a lot today. The Bills need Spencer Brown back in a big way. I was impressed with Dawson Knox on a day where they were playing a team that can get beat by a tight end and they clearly didn't have Kincaid at his best. Dawson Knox brought a level of consistency to the passing game that we still have not seen from wide receivers on this team. So it was nice to see Dawson Knox step up. I'm going to pull up his stats on the day here. He had Dawson Knox had 6 catches for 93 yards and a touchdown or no touchdown. He had I thought he had a touchdown for some reason.
Yeah. The 2-point conversion,
2-point conversion. That's what it was. So all three tight ends found their way to the paint at one point or another. I think another thing we learned today that's sneaky, and I don't know if it even matters that much. When the broadcast crew says stuff like you get the vibes from the Bills, that they're getting that information from the Bills.
Yeah.
And they said something that was interesting to me. They said, we know Joe Brady and Sean McDermott are well aware of how important it is to throw the football to win in this league. And while the Bills have been run first, they're well aware that you need to be throwing the ball to get the lead and running the ball. I don't know, Luca, the more I start piecing it together, the more I start thinking about the way McDermott has sounded whenever he's been asked about the running game and the roster and all this stuff, I just have this feeling that McDermott might be on this. And people are like, oh, he's a defensive coach. He wants to run the ball. I have a feeling McDermott's on the same page as a lot of us. It's like, what are we doing, Bean? We have Josh Allen and this is what you give us. I just gotten that vibe. And you know, today seems like a weird day to talk about the postscript on the Bills and if they're going to have a McBean split. But I just thought it was another clue that maybe McDermott is not overly thrilled with the GM. Those were my primary takeaways. You're welcome to comment on any of those, but what were your takeaways in the game? Anything that stood out to you?
No, the receiver point is just going to be a drum beaten to death throughout the remainder of the season. I mean, we talked about last week how deep you had to go on the box score to see where a receiver was in the receiving category. This week is what feels like no different. Dawson Knox, you mentioned, 6 catches for 93 yards. Dalton Kincaid, 4 catches for 41 yards and a score. James Cook, 2 catches for 31 yards. Then you finally get to a receiver with Gabe Davis, 2 catches for 21 yards. Khalil Shakir, 2 catches for 16 yards and a score. That score being incredibly important. Let's not forget that was the opening touchdown where Josh Allen threw one of the greatest seeds I've ever seen. Honestly, it's impressive. You know, props to Shakir for seeing the ball where it was located and having the ability to catch it. But you go to there, and then from after that, it's 1 catch for Shavers, 2 for Keon Coleman. That's it. And Keon Coleman, I saw, was getting a lot of flack on social media as well. For the most part of the game, the large majority of the game, it did feel like Keon Coleman's attention to detail and desire to run his routes through lacked, we'll put it. It felt like, I'm not going to call him checked out. I think calling a player checked out, a professional, he's young. I'm sure there's something else going on, and maybe he is checked out in a fashion. But it does feel like there's absolute smoke and fire to the Keon Coleman just not being well liked in house when it comes to the coaching staff and being on the same page with a lot of game plan and everything else. You know, whether that's a level of preparation that is just, you know, that's not there, or he's a young buck that's just not getting it. Who knows? But the receiver group in general is going to be a problem through the remainder of this season. What I think, and digging into your point here, I wasn't even aware that you were going to bring this up, but I also did find that interesting when Greg Olsen is sitting here talking about that and being like, you get this feeling that Joe Brady and Sean McDermott understand this. For them to say a comment like that tells me, as you said, they were hearing things in their meetings when they were, you know, in every week broadcasting team sits down, talks to coaching staff, watches a practice if they're in the area, things of that nature. And they create these narratives and these things to talking points that they want to discuss during a broadcast. And to break that out as early as they did, and essentially that was on the forefront of their mind. So that tells me, as you said perfectly, that things were said in house that recognize they need to do better in the passing game. What I think we saw today, Josh, is just the level of efficiency you can expect for what's in house. And that's just the sad reality of it. This is going to be a heavily relied on tight end and halfback position passing game. That is leaves a lot desired when it comes to explosives, but at least the Bills currently sit there and have guys like Kincaid, who hopefully can get back to health, Dawson Knox, who decided to finally show up this week, which is great, and be kind of that vintage 2021 Dawson Knox we saw 2022. You get guys like that. Jackson Hawes catching another touchdown pass is just hilarious in its own right. I love seeing him actually get into the paint. I just Gabe Davis being the relied on kind of playmaker pass catcher that Josh Allen went to on a key third down for his second reception. That to me tells me also the trust that he has in someone like him that just came back in rather than everything else that's out there as an option. There's so much question mark with that, which this is all you're going to get from the passing game this year. But then also, as you're saying, there's probably going to be a heavy revamp to this situation in the offseason. I gather, and the breadcrumbs tell me, or at least make me believe, that regardless if it's Bean in the front office, regardless if it's McDermott, which I would heavily expect McDermott to be the head coach still for this team moving forward, there's going to be aggressive decisions made at the pass catcher situation. There are going to be big moves, whether it's within the draft, whether it's with your draft capital for proven assets, whether it's moving assets you currently have on the roster for different assets. All of those things, I think, are very entertainable. I think Keon Coleman is absolutely someone that I wouldn't be surprised if he's here, but I also would be far from surprised if he's moved and gone. I think there's, you know, you're going to see another guy we didn't see was Palmer today. Palmer feels like inevitably just being moved on from because he can't be depended on. And this injury thing is more of an issue than it is for the price tag that he is. There's just a lot to be desired there. And it's the two things we learned from this in this game is this is what the passing game is going to look like if we go on a run and how it's going to be. And then don't expect it to stay that way moving into next season. I think the line is there. The reality has finally set in. It's taken two seasons, but the reality has set in that, hey, we need to go get some guys again. We need to do things so that we can truly be two-dimensional on offense, because this run heavy stuff, the inside the numbers, you know, the tight end being your main focal point, it's not sustainable when it comes to explosives and having a Josh Allen at quarterback be able to produce everything he needs to for you. So yeah, I'm with you on the shared point, but also just the lesson learned is this is what we can expect if you want an efficient passing game throughout the remainder of this season. This is what you saw against the Bengals. This is it. Don't expect anything greater than this.
The best case scenario for the Bills passing game at this point for the 2025 season is Dalton Kincaid becomes fully healthy. No more injuries happen. They get Spencer Brown back, which should happen soon. Joshua Palmer comes back and can stay healthy, although if you saw the videos that Thad Brown put out of him limping into the stadium today, it does not look like he's somebody that's going to be back anytime soon. And then you just need one other person. You either need ascension from Keon Coleman, which, you know, how do you count on that at this point? More so maybe ascension from Brandon Cooks as he continues to learn the system, or, you know, something else, Khalil Shakir, you know, continuing to be and maybe improving on what he's done this season. Let's talk about your guy, Christian Benford, Luca, because the Bills got what I count as three stops today on defense. And against a team like the Bengals, that is enough when you have an offense like the Bills have. Two of them were directly because of Christian Benford. One was in the first half when the Bengals punted, the only time either team punted today, or Yeah, is that right? Only time either team punted today. The Bengals.
That sounds right.
Christian Benford sacks Joe Burrow coming off the edge. And I thought it was going to be a sack fumble because Burrow did not see him at all. The Bengals were lucky to hold on to the ball. And then the play we've all seen. Even if you didn't watch the game, you've seen on any NFL highlight show you've watched. One of the best pick sixes you'll ever see. Reminiscent of J.J. Watt against the Bills in 2014, where he jumps up and bats an E.J. Manuel pass, and in the same motion, snags it and runs it back for a touchdown. But even better, because Benford was blitzing. And Benford stops his blitz, jumps into the air for no reason. He even said after the game, he's like, I don't know what overcame me and made me want to jump, but I did. And he jumps up, snags the ball, keeps his wits about him, and runs and outruns Jamar Chase to the end zone. Just an all-around, all-pro level player. This was a guy, Luca, 6 weeks into the season, a lot of us were saying, man, he's kind of having a down year. I think some of that can be explained from the fact this was his first year traveling with receivers. He used to just play to one side. And when I just saw what you watched, the Bears.
Yeah, brutal.
Yikes. Some of that can be attributed to that. But when it comes to Christian Benford, splash plays last 2 weeks against the Steelers and the Bengals, locking down top receivers. And, you know, we haven't gone back and watched the splits or anything like that. Watched the All-22. So I don't know how much he was definitively lined up on Jamar Chase. But if it comes out that he was lined up on Jamar Chase a lot of the game, and you hold Chase down like Chase was held down today, I think Christian Benford has gone from first 6 weeks of the season, what's wrong with Benford, to right now, is he in the conversation for all pro?
It's hard to argue with that. It genuinely is. I mean, I want to say, was it when Max Harrison finally was inserted in the lineup? It was at some point mid-season that I remember thinking to myself, Christian Benford got his swagger back. Like, Christian Benford of old is back to being who he is. And that's something we didn't see, as you pointed out, early on in the season, from start through to the bye week, things like that. It just felt off, you know, for a lot of fault being thrown at Trey White early on and still is kind of there. Christian Benford deserved also some shade to be thrown at him. And it just, something looked off with him. And of course, it opened up the discussions and conversations of why did we pay this guy? Things of that nature. It's like, why did today, last week, in the recent couple weeks, these are the reasons you paid at Christian Benford. These are the reasons you kept him around. I loved the comment of the broadcast as well. When Max Harrison broke up the pass with T. Higgins, it was said that everyone in house believes that Max Harrison and Christian Benford is the corner duo for the future moving forward. And today showed you just why you already paid Christian Benford and why his deal, in all honesty, feels like a steal comparative to the number one corners around the league. You know, you're getting this level play against the premier receiver in the metrics, that he shut it down and also capitalized and made a play when it needed to be made. And you did it for less than some of the other top corners out there. Now, Christian Benford is not another one of my absolute crushes in this league, Derek Stingley Jr., who is one of the, if not the highest paid corner, but he is deserved for being the highest corner because he does something a little bit extra spice on top of it when it comes to being an elite corner. It's he can be left on an island constantly and just he'll shut you down. Like that's freak nature. That's, you pay that guy whatever he wants. But Christian Benford is like right there when it comes to just being under that level of play where it's like when you get him at his best, you brought it up perfectly. He is an all-pro level player. And I think it's special to see a guy like him go through what he did early on this season, go through the struggles and turmoil of just some poor play and just him not looking like himself, and turn it around in season and figure it out and get back to that high standard that we have for him and he has for himself, I am sure, and just ball out from here. And that's something this defense early on that we were pissed off about was lacking. That's something it absolutely needed. You needed Benford to add in what Cole Bishop is contributing and something in the secondary that at least can slow down the bleeding a couple drives a game. This offense still has Josh Allen. This offense can still put up points regardless of how deficient the receiving options are. They still have James Cook, who's one of the best halfbacks in the league. You need to just create stops occasionally in games. You need to manufacture those stops. You're not going to get it from a pass rush perspective. We keep learning that week in, week out. Really helps if you just don't have TJ Sanders at the end. Your linebackers are not going to be able to do anything special for you at all, although they had a decent day today, mind you.
I think Shaq Thompson's the best linebacker they have.
But even there, like Matt Milano came up with a couple big tackles today. Like I'll even give the flowers where they're deserved. You just needed your secondary, though. The thing that was lacking early this season, the secondary needed to lock stuff down eventually, needed to create the opportunities and shut shit down that allowed you to force a punt, maybe even get that turnover. This team manufactured so many turnovers last season. That's how they were able to flip scripts and dominate offensively, because they were creating short drives and opportunities for the offense. They weren't doing that this year. And finally, Christian Benford is adding back into that mix. Max Harrison still looks good. I mean, all things considered, T. Higgins is an absolute handful. Mm-hmm. And Max Harrison did let up some plays early, but everyone lets up plays to T. Higgins. Let's be quite honest. When Joe Burrow is placing a ball to T. Higgins, not many players can stop that. Outside of that, I mentioned one breakup. He had a couple nice plays where it's just like he made the plays when he needed to. We have Max Harrison, when you have Christian Benford, and you have Cole Bishop back there, three of your core four are actually doing the job you need to in the secondary. You can get stops when you need to, even against the best of the best. And that's all we need from this defense to hopefully make a run that we want them to. And hopefully it can get to a point by the end of the season, Josh, where it's not hope anymore and it's back to an expectation.
Yeah, that would be nice. And, you know, they play well this time of year. They've stacked two really strong games in a row, and next week is another litmus test where they have an opportunity to really make a statement against a team that many feel is one of the best in the entire league. All right, Luca, it is time to put a bow on this Bills-Bengals game with our favorite segment of the week, particularly when the Bills win, game balls and game checks. Who gets your game ball for the Bills' victory over the Bengals today?
I mean, Josh, it's pretty simple coming from this seat. I'm not going to try to sit here and dick around and say, you know, this guy was pretty good and that guy was decent, stuff like that. Everyone that listens to this podcast, one, appreciate you. Two, knows where my heart lies on this team. And 4-7, returning that 67-yard pick six, Josh. 6-7, just putting it out there. When that happened, it just brightened my eyes. It was just awesome to see. You love seeing this. I mean, Christian Benford did something that I feel like I haven't seen a lot, and it's actually from a statistical standpoint. If anyone likes to just check box scores for fun and pulls up the Buffalo defense box score, and I like doing it on ESPN because it's nice and simple, he has a one in every statistical category. One tackle total, one solo tackle, one sack, one tackle for loss, one pass defended, one QB hit, one touchdown, one interception, if you want to throw it on there. They don't put it in that because they have their own separate category for that. But he's just got ones across the board. Christian Benford, from the boundary corner position, impacted this game everywhere. He got home and finished a corner blitz in a huge moment. He picked off a beautiful screen and ran it to the house with Jamar Chase hustling him down, although the hustle could be put in a little bit of question, Josh. I will say Jamar Chase kind of quit on that 10 yards out, and I thought that was a little odd for a Jamar Chase level speed. I digress. He absolutely dominated from the corner position to a level against Joe Burrow that was an absolute must if you wanted to win this game. And I just think there's no one else more deserving after this game to get a game ball than Christian Benford. So that's where it goes, to number 47 from me.
I love it. Hard to argue against. Christian Benford had a massive game 2 weeks in a row, and 2 weeks in a row he gets your game ball. I think there's several ways we could go. For those that aren't aware, we do not ever pick Josh Allen in this segment. We retired that ability last year when we realized we could probably pick Josh Allen almost every week. So Josh Allen is not an option in game balls. I'm sure he's okay with that. He has not voiced a complaint to us yet that we know of. We'll continue to check our DMs and see if that changes. But for now, he seems to be okay with it. I'm going to give you a couple of my runners up before I ultimately give you my pick. I'd mentioned him a little bit before. Shaq Thompson continues to make splash plays out there. There was a play where he had good coverage even on T. Higgins, who, by the way, it seemed like T. Higgins probably should have come out of that game a little sooner than he did. But that's neither here nor there. I was impressed with how James Cook ran, but boy, it's hard to give him a game ball when he fumbles the ball twice at the 1 yard line on the same drive. And then I also really liked, who else did I like in this game? I thought, you know, if you want to give Jordan Phillips and AJ Epenesa a shout out for their hand and in the interception where Phillips tipped it and Epenesa catches it, I get that. And then Mac Prater was 5 for 5 on all of his kicks today on a day where the field was slick. But ultimately, Luca, I'm going to go with Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox was a man amongst boys out there when it comes to Bills receiving options. 6 receptions for 93 yards, 7 total targets, and as Luca mentioned, a 2-point conversion. We knew going in the Bengals had struggled covering the tight end. That's why so many of us thought that it was so important for Kincaid, if he could be healthy, to play. Kincaid did gut it out, was a factor in the game, but obviously was not full throttle out there. Dawson Knox came up big for this team. And I know there's a lot of people out there question that contract he got several years ago before the Bills drafted Kincaid. It was right in line with what Kelsey got. And Dawson Knox has not lived up to that. I understand that. But on this day, when they needed somebody to step up, particularly in that position group, Dawson Knox stood up. He gets the game ball. All right, Luca, game check award. Who deserves to have their game check taken away for what happened in the Bills-Bengals game?
I think there are some players who played, participated, and, you know, took part of this game that I think could be deserving of this game check award. What I will say, though, is because of the outcome and the nature of this game, it feels dirty to pick on someone. In my opinion, no one stands out too much that I feel like they are a clear candidate for this. So in the spirit of this award, something that we love to do in those perfect games, Josh, there's one individual who didn't even appear on the entirety of the box score for their position, Mitch Wishnowsky. Buddy, you didn't do anything today, and that's great because we needed every single point that we had and every drive needed to be capitalized. Thank you for not needing to step on the field and boot a ball far. That is very much so appreciated. But also, since you didn't actually do anything of your primary job today, you get my game check award.
I'm with it. I mean, on a day where you don't need your punter, it's hard not to argue like, hey, go ahead and give your game check back. James Cook, I think, deserves consideration here for multiple fumbles. But again, he's a guy the Bills have been able to count on. Unfortunately, Ty Johnson, I think, deserves some consideration here, too. I don't know what you can really do about slipping in the snow, but he didn't do much outside of that. And, you know, he had basically less than 40 yards total, but that slip cost the Bills 4 points. Brandon Cooks had 0 catches on 0 targets with 0 yards. I'm going to go outside the box. I bet you if I had given you 30 guesses, you wouldn't be able to come up with this. I'm going to go with Morgan Fox. There's going to be a contention out there of you that say, who is Morgan Fox? Let me tell you who Morgan Fox is. After Michael Hoyt got injured, Morgan Fox was the guy that the Bills signed as a free agent. And there was a lot of excitement that, hey, he could fill the Michael Hoyt role. But at the very least, he could come in and get TJ Sanders back to defensive tackle where he belonged. Not only did Morgan Fox, who was active today, if you didn't notice, don't worry about it because he sure didn't do anything. Not only was Morgan Fox active today, and yes, he did actually play in the game. He had 11 snaps, Luca. It didn't matter because TJ Sanders played all of his snaps today on the edge. So Morgan Fox, 0 snaps that mattered, 0 impact plays, couldn't even be bothered to register a tackle in this game. And TJ Sanders still lined up at edge, which there's going to be an investigation on that, because holy cow, you invested a lot in this kid in the second round. It's not like you just have greatness going on a defensive tackle. So yeah, Morgan Fox. It's a Morgan Fox kind of day on the game check. All right, Luca, what's next for the Bills is a date with the Patriots. The Patriots won round one in Buffalo on Monday Night Football by 3 points. The Bills go back to New England. Have you seen an early line on this game?
I have not, but I believe you just said Monday night. It was a Sunday night game, Josh. Just
Bills Patriots was Monday night, wasn't it? I thought I could almost swear I was at work.
Atlanta was right. Monday night. Yeah. Right. No, I would have been there, or I wouldn't have been there. It was a Monday night. And unfortunately, I was at the Bills Patriots game. So, Sunday night game.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up right now on the early line for this game. Just before I even get into the line, though, what's your lean right now on how this game feels?
My lean is the Patriots have less question marks right now at this moment in time. And then coming off the bye, especially, they get that bonus week to prepare for it. So, you know, just looking at it from a simple neutral matchup perspective, I would definitely tip the scale to the Patriots. I just think the Patriots right now are humming in a capacity that's good. I don't think it's an overly aggressive, scary manner, but it's the scariest part about this Patriots team, Josh, is the fact that coaching has them working in a way where it's a very much do your job kind of vibe. And what I mean by that is Vrabel definitely feels as if he is, what's the word? Reinstituting the Patriot way philosophy and bringing back that, you know, next man up, everyone has their job, do your job mentality. And even the secondary players, we'll call them, not the ones literally in the secondary being DBs and such, but just your non Drake Mays, not your Stephon Diggs, but everyone else, the supporting cast is stepping up and doing their job, doing it well enough to create a consistent winning culture. Now they are being consistent in their culture and game planning and wins by essentially beating down the easiest fourth place schedule in the history of the NFL. But I'm also not the one that subscribes and sitting here, but they haven't beaten anybody. It's like, well, I mean, they did beat the Bills on the road. So you can't sit there and be like, they didn't beat anyone. It's like, no, they beat the 5-time AFC East champs led by Josh Allen, Buffalo Bills, in Orchard Park when the Bills were 4-0 and humming and everyone thought everything was okay. So no, they are still very good. They are consistent. Everyone does the thing that they need to do. And I think that's a massive credit to Vrabel, as I mentioned, just bringing that Patriot way culture and vibe back to the building, that everyone understands how important they are. And it truly is everyone in the building, beyond the players, even the staff and just everyone around the facility is important in making sure they can maintain a winning way and culture to get over the line. And that's why I'd probably going into this lean to them at this moment in time.
What do you think the line is?
I'd probably put it at Patriots minus 3.5.
The line right now is Bills minus 1.5.
Huh.
That flipped what? Since this morning when it was Patriots minus 1.5.
That's going to change real quick. I can't. Oh, man. That feels like recency bias at its absolute max. That's what that feels. You can sell me on Josh Allen. You can sell me on all that. The Bills have been the AFC East king for the past 5 seasons, yada, yada, yada. I think it's undeniable just how consistent top to bottom the Patriots have been. It's not necessarily, again, that they're world beaters. It's just the last time I remember the Patriots not really putting it all together for 60 minutes was that Steelers game that they lost at home week 3, I want to say it was, where they had 2 or 3 turnovers in the red zone and the ball wasn't bouncing their way. And I think that's the moment after that game when they started this 11 game win streak, if math is mathing, that that surprises me a little bit that the Bills would be a slight favorite going into Foxborough for this game. I'm just going to be frank with that.
Well, I know Vegas isn't a big fan of getting elite quarterbacks at a discount, and they don't want to, you know, you pick Josh Allen to win a game, Patrick Mahomes to win a game. It's why Patrick Mahomes is down three offensive linemen tonight, and he's favored by 3.5 points against the Texans,
yeah,
who should feast on that offensive line. But we shall see. I'm excited about the game. I do think, you know, as we get into this week and some of the stuff that we'll talk about how the Patriots really do have a team that is set up to give the Bills trouble. They can match up their cornerbacks on the Bills receivers and then dedicate their resources to slowing down James Cook and Josh Allen. And it's really who in the Bills weapons department is going to win a matchup. And if, you know, Kincaid's not healthy, you know, they are missing Will Campbell, but we've seen this Bills pass rush, particularly without Joey Bosa, who does not feel like he's going to be back this week, not be able to take advantage of situations where teams either had bad offensive lines like Houston or injured offensive lines. So I wouldn't anticipate that being a massive difference in this game this week with Will Campbell being out. But I look forward to talking about it, Luca. I look forward to Wednesday's Bills Chat Live. I look forward to next week's Bills Chat Halftime Show. It'd be nice to be in the lead of one of these halftime shows. It's always stressful. And I look forward to next week, Bills Chat Podcast with Luca. We'll be back breaking down everything that happened in Bills and Patriots. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. The Bills improved to 9-4, and we'll talk to you next time on Bills Chat.